It's a misty evening on the San Francisco Bay. The sounds of waves greet you, steady and relentless, as you peer through the mist at an island that's captured the imagination of the world. The island, which looks like a big rock, has been a lighthouse, a military fortress, and most infamously, America's most notorious federal prison.
Welcome to Seven Hills Supper Club. I'm your host, Ashita.
And I'm your host, Prescott. And today, we're heading to Alcatraz. So we wanted to do an episode about Alcatraz, the triathlon, the escape from Alcatraz, because we're runners, but we didn't want this to be like an episode for runners or for triathletes, but for people that have a curiosity about things that seem extreme and potentially scary that somehow thousands of people seem to still want to do all the time. And what was interesting about this place is that it's not just like, there's a lot of extreme races, right? You've got like, what's it, Moab?
Yeah, there's ultra marathons of like insane lengths. There's people who cross the like English Channel. So, I mean, the people are doing plenty of crazy shit.
But somehow this Alcatraz triathlon has a lot of history behind it because Alcatraz is just a very...
It's wild.
It's a weird place.
It's insane.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's kind of an interesting window to look at one of the gems of like a blood diamond of San Francisco.
I mean, this is kind of a stupid question, but is it technically in San Francisco?
You know, I have no idea because if you think about it, it's a national park.
Oh, it's national?
It's a national park, and it used to be a federal penitentiary, and it was always administered by the U.S. Army, even after, as soon as like California was admitted as a state and taken from the Mexicans. I have no idea, honestly.
I also,
like, if you call 911, who shows up? That's my question.
That's a very
right?
good point. But also, I mean, I guess like it's associated with San Francisco because I'd say most people interact with Alcatraz through tours. They have a night tour where you can go on and it's a creepier version of the prison. So yeah, it's a San Francisco tourist landmark, and then it has this interesting race, and then very fascinating history.
Yeah, and just to get everyone on the same page, Alcatraz is like a rocky, small island about a mile and a half off the coast of San Francisco in the bay, but in the part of the bay that's near the opening to the ocean where there's really strong currents. And it's had this mysterious history because it was I think Azkaban from... Harry Potter was named after Alcatraz because it was like considered to be the toughest prison to escape from because you'll die drowning. Mm-hmm. You have some tidbits there. Anyway, so that's Alcatraz. But so let's start with some history.
Yeah, let's dig into it.
So history, like I think a lot of our episodes are going to cover history. We have to start. We kind of have to put like a flag in. Where are we going to start? Probably where California becomes a state. The U.S. takes it from Mexico, right? Mm-hmm. Like 1848.
Your commentary around the 1 year. Like within a year, we think of the Gold Rush, 49ers, very Californian, very U.S. But that was a quick turnaround.
And
we
one
stole
year.
That bit. We stole that piece of land and we claimed it as ours.
This is going to be a PG show. Yeah, 1 year from California being Alta California from the Mexicans, and then like boom, it's America. And we think of like 1949, Levi Strauss, the jeans, American, right? But like a year before, it was Mexico.
Americans
are good at branding,
yes.
Right?
We just steal shit and rebrand it as ours.
So say you're like, because all these people that came to work in San Francisco were like from New York or Connecticut or whatever. All these stories on Wikipedia about like a businessman and privateer or something, right? Do they come in and was like everyone speaking Spanish here before? It's just very interesting. Yeah. Anyway, so 1848, it becomes California. 1849, U.S. Army starts thinking, how do we use Alcatraz as kind of like a fortification, build a fort?
And that makes sense because I think if you've just expanded your landmass, there's suddenly new areas and territories to guard. So Alcatraz becomes... Initially, it was a lighthouse station, and then they started to, I think, add military apparatus, and they made it a proper military fort.
And it was built by a man, ZBT, as I call him, Zealous Bates Tower. His name is Zealous Bates Tower. and the fort had 200 garrison soldiers.
Mm-hmm. So it was a pretty, I feel like that's a pretty meaty setup.
Yeah, and it was important because, like, you know, just a few years later, the Civil War starts, and even in, like, solidly, you know, Union territory, you had Confederate sympathizers. Mm-hmm. So Alcatraz basically became a stash where all of the, it's not clear to me when they say all the arms what they mean, but apparently lots of armaments were moved from the Bay Area onto Alcatraz where they could be firmly under the Union military's control, lest they fall into the hands of Confederate sympathizers. And of course, if you were a Confederate sympathizer, you'd just get thrown in jail mm-hmm. on Alcatraz. Mm-hmm. And also apparently privateers, which I learned basically is kind of like if you're just a private individual, but there's a war going on and you have a boat,
you just want to get involved. You want to be involved. Action.
Yeah. It's kind of like you're like a franchise McDonald's owner, but basically you could just say, I'm now sailing on behalf of the Confederacy and anything I steal. And it's like a legal framework for people to basically be pirates, just volunteer. Anyway, so privateers.
Yeah. Boredom drives people to do crazy things.
So they would be thrown in. But anyway, obviously we know how that ended.
Yes. And then it became a federal prison, primarily because they needed more secure locations for inmates. Is that?
Yeah, I think it became a prison in the 30s. And this was interesting because, you know, if you dig into U.S. history, there was a pretty crazy, organized crime was a very big deal. Like, U.S. cities were, like, run by the mob, right? Mm-hmm. In the 1910s, 20s, 30s. So you had these very highly organized criminals that could escape, kind of like these Mexican drug lords.
Right.
That, you know.
Because once you get into prison, you already have a network of your people who are there waiting for you. And then you have these factions. And yeah, being on an island surrounded by choppy waters just makes it a lot more difficult to escape. Can you imagine being the first cohort of inmates being sent to Alcatraz? You're just like, well, fuck.
Rough.
And I actually read that the first inmates, they didn't just show up to the island and have a prison to move into. They literally had to build the prison themselves. And there's something pretty sick about that, where you are forcing someone to essentially build the coffin that they're about to be buried in.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I would like the opportunity to build my own little, like, backdoor escapes. But yeah, it's pretty, pretty cruel. But they did eat lobster, I heard from you.
Yes. So apparently, for a long time, lobster was just seen as like an insect of the ocean, a lot of protein. And so I found a screenshot of a like a digitized menu from Alcatraz back in the day. And lobster was frequently on the lunch and dinner menu.
That just goes to show you mindset is so important.
100%.
Like, you know how polenta used to be, quote unquote, you know, poverty food. And now it's like you go to a
rebranding. Thing. It's all about marketing.
If I ever have to eat insects that I find disgusting, I just have to sit and think, like, it's like a lobster, right? Anyway.
There was one more luxury that inmates in Alcatraz had that no other inmates in American prisons had at the time, which is the guards had an ingenious idea that prisoners should get hot showers because they felt like if prisoners are used to showering in hot water, the cold water from the bay is going to be even more unbearable if they try to escape.
So when it was a prison, it had some of the most notorious criminals. Al Capone, probably the most famous Chicago gangster. He was in Alcatraz for like 5 years. I had never heard of this guy, but George Kelly, whose nickname was Machine Gun, does not sound like a very nice guy. Also a gangster and a serial kidnapper, was there for almost 20 years.
But it's also interesting, when I was reading about Al Capone and Kelly's time in Alcatraz, I would see things like he had a low profile. He was a model prisoner. It was relatively uneventful. So I think some of these like bigwigs who end up in Alcatraz, they just viewed it as a time to like reconnect with themselves, mindfulness, just like relax. I even read that Al Capone picked up learning how to play the banjo when he was at Alcatraz. And by the end of his time there, he literally knew how to play 500 songs. But then, of course, there's always folks who think they can work the system and get out of it.
And there's like a long history of people being banished to islands. Wasn't Napoleon like banished to an island?
I mean, if
point?
You think about it, it does just intuitively make sense. Like if there's a problematic person, you're like, let's just pick them up and put them far away, isolated, and maybe they'll stop bothering us.
It was the original cancel culture. Like, yes. you're literally just moved away from everyone else, right? Yeah, Napoleon was basically cached off the coast of Italy on the island of Elba. So probably the spiciest thing that happened was in 1946, there was a mass attempt at escape, and it resulted in what was called a two-day siege. I don't even know what that means.
I think that means that the inmates had control over the prison, so the power shifted from the correctional officers to the inmates.
So apparently only two correctional officers died and three inmates died as well. But it was not a prison for that long. So was it like the 50s or the early 60s? I think they shut the prison down. And it was like for like the most innocuous reasons. It was like hard to maintain or something.
Yeah, it is a little suspicious to me, because going back to like, how did people try to escape? Were there any successful escapees? So over the entire period of the prison, which I guess it was like around for 30-ish years, 36 men tried to escape over 14 separate escape attempts. And almost all of them were like definitely died during the process, except for three. And that's not to say the three who were not definitively like killed during the process survived. It's more just that their bodies weren't found. And there's sort of different factions on the internet who believe that either they were able to make the successful swim across the bay, or they just like died and their bodies were never found.
And the swim is intense. So when we were looking at like how people have strategies for how they pace themselves, for this triathlon, you know, you'll just see like a random YouTube video of a great white shark eating a seal, like off the coast of Azkaban, Alcatraz.
Yeah, I was reading that the currents are so strong that essentially, even if a human swimmer is swimming at like 2 knots or 3 knots, it's the equivalent of them making like half a knot or 1 knot of progress. So you're just like spending so much of your energy fighting against the currents, which are due to like that unique location of being like close to the border of the ocean.
It's hard for me to really understand this, because the very little dabbling I've done in open water swimming has always been around these old Russian women at that cove in the north of San Francisco. And they have this club, and online they say something like, if you're a regular swimmer and you can swim 3,500 yards, then you're probably already physically prepared to make the short crossing from Alcatraz.
No, you're joking.
No, I mean, this is what they're publishing online. Yeah. Nobody should take this as advice to swim from Alcatraz. Okay. But
that just seems like a blatant lie. Well, there's definitely companies that I think make this crossing. They enable swimmers to make this crossing with kayaks and a boat, you know, alongside you. I was reading accounts of folks online who've done it, and these are people who are very active Olympians, and they were talking about like the leg cramps, just the like brutality of the waves, the cold water itself, which is just jarring. So yeah, it sounds pretty intense. So let's talk about the triathlon. It originally started in 1981, but it was a private club event. And then that event used to begin in San Francisco and end in Marin. But then I think in 1983, they made it a public race. And the entire race is like contained in San Francisco. So the course includes a 1.5-mile swim in the bay, then an 18-mile bike ride through the marina, the Richmond, and then through Golden Gate Park, and then a final 8-mile run that essentially borders the coast of the Presidio. And when you look at this race, it's essentially just like an insane swim and then like a relatively short bike ride and a pretty short run after. So,
and like for context, if you look at like Ironman Kona, some of these great, it's a 3-mile swim, a 100-mile bike ride, and what, like a 30-mile or 26?
Yeah, it's like a marathon.
So this is very much, the escape from Alcatraz is very much a swim that has some like light running and biking tacked on to become a triathlon, but it's really a swim.
The fastest time ever to complete this race has been just under 2 hours. I think it was done by an Olympian, so obviously someone in peak shape. And then the final finishers usually tend to come in around the six and a half hour mark, which to me sounds insane, because That means how long are you in the water if you're taking 6 hours to complete this race?
I struggle to believe it. I would imagine maybe it's one of the older Russian women and they're really good at swimming, but they just walk whatever they eat.
Okay, but even if you walk, I mean, if you walk, jog 8 miles, let's say it takes 2 hours. The bike ride, an hour tops, right? Let's say 2 hours.
You're 3 hours in the water?
And that just seems,
and for context,
like
this is like 55 to 58 degrees. I think it's like 58 at the highest.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're doing like an indoor triathlon at one of these competitive pools, the water's like in the high 70s.
Mm-hmm.
It is cold. Like I only have one of those vests. I don't have like a full bodysuit, but that's why I never go for more than like 1,000 yards because I just, it's too much.
So obviously the most important question here is, would you rather do the Alcatraz triathlon or be an inmate at Alcatraz?
Well, I know your answer.
Yes, I would obviously be an inmate for a year. I mean, if it was like for the rest of my life, I would suck it up and do it. I'd do the triathlon, but 100%, I do not want to get into the bay and swim for... And let's be real, I'd be one of those people who needs to be in the water for like 2 hours, so...
And you guys don't know Ishida, but she hates cold water.
Yeah, it's like a pathological, like...
I don't think I've ever gotten her to get into a swimming pool on a vacation once, because it'll be like 70-degree water.
Yeah. So you would do the triathlon.
I would do the triathlon.
Speaking of which, it's actually also not super easy to do the triathlon because it's a lottery system and there's a lot of folks who apply every year. So it's infamous. It obviously has a lot of mystery. And it seems like a lot of folks who've done the Alcatraz triathlon and are serial triathletes say that it's one of the best races they've done, primarily just because it's such a scenic experience. And of course, running in the Presidio and biking through Golden Gate, it's like very much this immersive like nature experience.
And we're going to have to do a lot more episodes on just the running and outdoor scene in San Francisco, but it's stunning. So that's Alcatraz, or that's Escape from Alcatraz, the 15-minute intro. Am I committing to doing this?
It sounded like you are.
I'm going to enter the lottery. How about that?
Yes. We'll have to record a follow-up episode once you've done the race, and we can hear your first-person account as to how it was.
I'll do the race if you commit to putting your entire body into the bay.
Okay. I'll think about it. Before we wrap up, a few words about our sponsor.
In this era of remote work, is there anything more remote than staffing a maximum security federal prison on an island? Today's episode is brought to you by the Federal Correctional Services Department, where the concept of remote gets a whole new meaning.
That's right. Forget about your home office. How about a guard tower with a 360-degree view of foreboding high seas? And for those of you who've mastered Zoom meetings, imagine coordinating a headcount. Now that's what we call a captive audience.
Becoming a partner at Federal Correctional Services is an exciting opportunity to learn within one of the fastest growing employers in America. Starting with our first location in Florence, Colorado, FCS is proud to be executing against a pipeline of 14 new state-of-the-art maximum security locations. As such, we're recruiting talented and rugged individuals nationwide. And with 3 new island-based correctional communities being planned, there are numerous opportunities for new recruits to experience an Alcatraz-inspired work environment.
Federal Correctional Services is on the lookout for the bravest and the boldest. Got a knack for psychology and a tolerance for extremely high and long-duration periods of stress? Put that to work.
So, if you're yearning for a career that's as far from your couch as possible, and you believe in making a difference, one island and one inmate at a time, Federal Correctional Services wants you.
Thanks for joining us at the Seven Hills Supper Club. Stay tuned for more tales that push the boundaries of remote possibilities. And until next time, keep your life vests handy. And remember, in San Francisco, even the careers come with a view.
Federal Correctional Services is an equal opportunity employer. All qualified applicants will receive consideration for employment, not working, age, disability status, genetic information, sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression, or any other characteristic protected by federal, state, or local laws. Veterans and their eligible should apply. In accordance with federal law, veteran preference points will be applied to those who qualify. We provide reasonable accommodations for applicants with disabilities. If you need a reasonable accommodation for any part of the application and hiring process, please notify the agency. The decision on granting reasonable accommodation will be granted on a case-by-case basis. This agency does not endorse any third-party services, products, or providers mentioned in this advertisement.